Welcome. We're here live from Orlando. I told you this last week. We're broadcasting from the Category Management Association's annual conference. It's live for the first time in 2 years. People are just starting to come. The conference officially doesn't open up till about 1 o'clock. It's in their expo rooms. You're seeing some people starting to come in, but it's really not going to be jammed here until about 1 o'clock. But we can't do it at 1 o'clock, as we talked about last time, because I've got to be on the main stage, which is about a quarter of a mile away from here. So with all that as a lengthy introduction, glad you could join us today, and welcome. And Sally, tell me a little bit about Women's History Month.
Hi, Phil. Tomorrow will be the first day of Women's History Month. And this year, the theme is really fitting. It's women providing healing, promoting hope. This is a theme that is both a tribute to the ceaseless work of caregivers and frontline workers during the ongoing pandemic. So I have just chosen a few women to talk about in the food world really stand out to me. And so I'll run through those really quick, and we'll put these up on supermarketguru.com if you want to read a little bit more about them. But first off, we love retail dietitians. And I wanted to mention Allison Delaney, who was the Retail Dietitian Business Alliance RD of the Year for 2021. She was awarded this because she is very special. She is the Nutrition Partners Program Lead at Stop and Shop. And when the pandemic hit, she was just getting ready to launch this in-store dietitian program. And she quickly pivoted and she launched a fully virtual program in April of 2020. Marion Nessel, we have to mention Marion Nessel. She is a real warrior. Yes, she is a real warrior for the consumer, and she has made it her mission to present the full story about what's in our food, where it comes from, what the marketing practices of the food world are. And she's written for the San Francisco Chronicle and written 6 books, and now she writes her own blog, which is Food Politics. Claire Babineau Fontenot, a big hero. She is the CEO of Feeding America, which we need really badly right now. And we've all been paying attention to the news and that all of these retailers and big food companies are partnering with Feeding America right now to really take care of food insecure people out there.
So, Sally, I have a friend of Claire's with me. It's a surprise for you. So she's going to join us in just a minute or so. But I've got to tell you something on Farm Food Facts, you know, USFRA's podcast. We've interviewed her a couple times. Oh, my God. She is just one of the best, not only women, but industry leaders that we have. So glad that she made your list. Who else do we got?
Yes. Another woman that I'd like to mention that probably a lot of you may not have heard of in the food world yet. Her name is Jalea Hemming, and she started Nourish and Bloom in Fayetteville, Georgia, which is right outside of Atlanta, which is the first Black-owned autonomous grocery store. They've also got robotic delivery there. So they're the only one. And she has been really involved in advocating for diversity and inclusion in the workplace. And she is an influential speaker promoting women in technology. She hosts 3 podcasts. She's been part of several startups, one an innovative meatless entree line for kids. And she's just really, really a standout woman in the food world right now. And then one more that I would love to mention is Rachel Berliner, who started Amy's Kitchen, which she started this company when she was pregnant with her daughter and she couldn't find organic food. So her and her husband started making pot pies, and that has grown into this company that is beyond her wildest dreams, from what I've read, that, you know, offers gluten-free, organic, vegetarian food, all these nice packaged frozen foods to meet people's special dietary needs.
And the first time I met Rachel was probably at some trade show somewhere. We've remained friends all this year. And what Rachel and Andy done to create this company is fabulous. And also what I love about this, and maybe it'll change one day, but she always tells me how all these major companies want to buy them. Mm-hmm. And she and Andy say, no, nope, we want it ours. We want to be in control. So Sally, I want to introduce you to Claire's friend, Erin Fitzgerald. Erin Fitzgerald is with us. She's the CEO
Hi, Erin.
of of U.S. farmers and ranchers in action. And bottom line, come on in. You got to come in closer to me. And bottom line is, she's also on the program. I'm going to be introducing her in just a couple hours from now. So Sally wants to know, what are you going to be talking about?
Sally, nice to meet you. I always go where Phil goes. It's pretty simple, but I'm so excited to be here today to talk about how we have 30 harvests, 30 chances for our farmers in the face of climate change. We're the most impacted by climate change, the food and agriculture sector, but we can also be a solution to climate change. So we're calling on leaders in action for a decade of agriculture and hoping that many of our retailers and brands step up today to take action. Thanks.
And as always, Erin just makes everybody, you know, so excited and empowered about this. So I will see you back in the main ballroom soon. In the meantime, I also want to read you a note that we had from last week's broadcast. One of our friends, Joan Buehliger from LA Perspectives, which is a food development company, wrote me a note. And we want all of you to do this. So if I make a mistake or if Sally makes a mistake, call us on it. And you know, we know that John Pandol is going to do it. We know Frank D. Pasquale is going to do it, but we want everybody to do it. So here's the email that I got from Joan. Here's what I said after last week's report about COVID-19. The bottom line, if you want to reduce your risk of COVID-19, don't drink. That's what I said. The conclusion statement in this study, because Joan really reviewed it, this is her background, actually suggested that those who drank red wine, white wine, and champagne, just 1 to 2 glasses a week, appear to have chances to reduce the risk of COVID-19. It was the beer, cider, and spirits that they suggested increased the risk of COVID-19. But personally, Joan says, I don't think the study is rigorous enough to draw any such conclusions whatsoever. So Joan, thanks for calling me out on that. And again, for all of you, please, this is a forum. It's an open forum. We want to hear what you have to say. So with that, Sally, let's get started with this week's insights.
Okay, Phil, I wanted to talk about delivery. I have found out about this new company, but first let's talk about what the problem with delivery is. So many restaurants...
Nobody's making any money.
Exactly.
Nobody's making any money.
Exactly. Yes. You know, these restaurants had to very quickly adapt to a lot of delivery. Delivery rates have remained really higher than they were pre-COVID, but there's all kinds of issues and it's hard to make money.
Yeah. And also in looking at this report, this comes from CNN. The interesting thing is a lot of restaurants are talking about the fact that delivery is stressful for employees. They have to balance taking care of in-store customers, obviously, filling increasing orders of to-go orders before the pandemic. 2019, according to Euromonitor, delivery accounted for about 7% of total U.S. restaurant sales. This is delivery pizza. It's everything. Obviously, there was a spike during the pandemic. Now it's back down to 9%. So it's interesting. Gorillas, we saw last week, you know, the 10-minute delivery firm in New York City. Well, last Friday, guess what? They pulled back. They're saying, we can't deliver in 10 minutes anymore. So that promise is no longer. And also, to your point, the economics, it costs a restaurant about 30% of the order in fees for these third-party providers. So it just doesn't make a lot of sense. There is a lot of innovation going on. Just saw a picture of a fast food restaurant that put in 3 drive-through lanes so that they can handle, because people want to do more drive-through than ever before. So we're seeing that. What else we got?
Well, just real quickly, there is a company called Club Feast, a new company that is out of San Francisco in Manhattan, and they're doing something really cool. And they say that the customers can save 40% on restaurant delivery, which also is helping the restaurants as well. But what they're doing is they're working with restaurants to create a menu that is large. They can make large batches of, and people are ordering it ahead of time rather than right when they want it on demand.
Right.
So check out Club Feast. There's some, it's also a great, interesting, it's an interesting approach to reducing food waste. I really like what they're doing. That's Club Feast, and they've got a website, clubfeast.com.
And talking about food waste, what we found is this UK study that really looked at produce. And what they found is that when we're buying bags of produce, bags of apples or limes or lemons, two problems. Number one is typically we're overbuying, so there's one part of food waste. And second, when this produce is in the plastic, it's not lasting as long. And if, in fact, you've just lowered your refrigerator to be 5 degrees, your produce that's not in bags, it's going to last longer. It's going to be fresher, and you're not going to have to throw it out as often.
Yes, this is a very interesting study to me. And they specifically looked at apples and potatoes and bananas and cucumbers was one of the other ones. And it just, it seems like a very easy solution. Just take that plastic off and let us just buy it, you know, the amount that we need rather than having to buy an entire bag of apples and then not eating the whole bag and it being thrown out.
And then don't forget at the beginning of COVID, what happened is there were some retailers like Walmart who said they would only take produce in bags because they were afraid of people like squeezing the limes and stuff like that and touching them. Hopefully that's over now. USDA has just announced their U.S. Food Loss and Waste 2030 champions. These are the companies that have committed to reducing food loss and food waste in their U.S. operations by 50%, significant, by the year 2030. Who are these new members to this very elite and very important group?
Yay, we're very proud of these companies, aren't we? Albertsons Companies, BJ's Wholesale Club, Danone North America, Smithfield Foods Incorporated, Starbucks, Cisco, and Tyson's Foods. And they've all got different ways that they're approaching being more sustainable and cutting down on food waste. I mean, Starbucks has even got a Grounds for Your Garden program, so to help with commercial composting methods. So there's some really cool ideas out there.
Very cool. Now, this next story that you found, the images really freaked me out. Tell us about this.
Well, I think it's freaked a lot of people out, actually. Did you watch the Octopus Teacher on Netflix, Phil?
I watched part of it. And, you know, it was shot beautifully, made the octopuses look octopi look great. But this story from Ravers, it's one of the ugliest octopus that I've ever seen.
Well, that movie did make me fall in love with this beautiful creature. But in Spain now, they have created the first commercial octopus farm. Now, apparently, there are some countries that octopus, they just eat a lot of octopus and it is in high demand. So this could be really great for them. But there is some controversy over it. Some organizations do not feel like that this is an animal that should be kept in captivity, that it is a intelligent animal and it can feel distress. But also the conditions, the reason this hasn't happened before is the conditions they have to create so that these octopi can survive and thrive are very, very difficult to build.
And also, just to build up on your point, and again, I watched this from the movie, the London School of Economics did a review of 300 scientific studies, and what they found is octopi, as you point out, experience distress. They can also experience happiness, and that high welfare farming, such as we're describing, would be impossible. So the question is, you know, is this going to fly or not? And what are we going to be doing to our poor little pretty octopuses before they wind up on somebody's dinner plate? There's one ugly fruit fails. Tell me about that, Sally. I don't have that.
Okay. Well, we've seen a lot of programs, Phil, that where we're trying to promote the fruit, the ugly fruit, the produce that doesn't look perfect, that not necessarily everybody wants to buy in the supermarket. So they reduce the prices and try to sell it other ways. But I don't think it's worked that well. So now there's a new study out that's saying that, you know, suggesting we should use a remove and replace strategy, and that supermarkets can actually make more money using this strategy. And what that means is that they take the blemished fruit and they donate that to food banks, and they always have pretty produce on their shelves, and they can charge a higher price for that because people will pay a higher price if it looks great.
Yeah, good point. And to your point, the ugly fruit just hasn't worked. Even those some retailers around the globe that have given it away to people, people just don't want it. We've conditioned consumers that that apple has to be big and red and shiny and unblemished. So back to our wedding story.
Yes.
So as I start to say, I screwed up. I'm sorry. It's live. So bottom line is people now have a choice on how they want to make their weddings, which leads us to this week's metaverse story. So tell me about this. And first, let's start off. What is the average wedding cost here in the U.S.?
Well, it's interesting, Phil. I looked this up, and the average wedding cost for 2021 was $22,500. It's down from 2019 when it was $28,000. So it's interesting that that cost has gone down. I think we all know why, because we've been in a different circumstances.
Right.
But yes, you can go on the metaverse now and have a wedding. And there are a couple of people that have already done this. One in the U.S. There's been a big Indian wedding, and we know that the Indian culture, that they tend to have very, very large weddings that go on for days and days and days. And that industry in India has been suffering throughout the pandemic. So maybe this is a way to pick business back up.
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, you know, the whole idea of a wedding is seeing friends, family, and yes, you can do it with avatars. But also, one of the things that I think is the creepiest part about this, first of all, the wedding that you described that took place in India cost about $30,000. So a little bit more than the average wedding. But if you do it the right way, you can have a metaverse wedding for $10,000. I still don't know where all that money goes to, you know, in the metaverse. But the creepiest thing that I find is that you can then give, you know, the bride and groom, you know, their presence in the metaverse. So whether it's NFTs or whatever else it is, so you're not even giving them real presents. Yeah. Right?
I guess cryptocurrency is appealing to some people, but yes, I'm not sure I want to get an NFT for my wedding gift. I'll take the silverware, the real silverware.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I'm with you 100%. So what we're first going to do before we take comments is we're going to go back and show you something that we've done with the Morning Fix. This is just an excerpt of it. And for the full episode, just go to supermarketguru.com. And then after that, we're going to take your comments, your insights, and kick off the 2022 Category Management Association annual meeting. So, Tony, let's play this back.
So I think you mentioned this already, Sachi. But to be honest with you, and I know you guys are friends, so I'm going to put you on the spot. Why did you choose Microsoft with all the technology companies that are out there? And Microsoft certainly is one of the leading ones, if not the leader. But what made you choose, you know, Microsoft as the partner to make this all happen?
So I think this is a really easy question to answer, actually. When we, and maybe I'm being glib about this a little too much, but 4 years ago when I joined Bear and we started having these conversations around what are we going to do? How are we going to accelerate our digital capabilities as Bear? We started talking to a lot of different entities. You could probably figure out who they are, various companies. And what became clear to us was not often was the vision they portrayed to us or the way they wanted to work with us aligned with our own vision. Until we talked to Microsoft. That's when we spoke with Microsoft and they laid out the vision they see for agriculture, where they see agriculture heading. how they see Bear in that vision, how they see that they could work with Bear. It became clear we were already aligned before even really engaging or working together. So I made the decision to work together pretty easy, to be honest. We realized we share the same vision, which is we want to impact positively the farmer and the grower, which is core to our belief here at Bear. And Microsoft shared a similar vision that they want to make sure the customer is at the center of everything they do and everything, every benefit they create. And so based on that, the technical stuff became a lot more easier to talk through because we were heading on the same road in the same direction. It was just now we've decided to be in the same car.
So Ranveer, I'm going to ask you to build on that. What does Saatchi and Bear bring to the party for Microsoft?
Yeah, and as Saatchi said, for us too. So, you know, as I had mentioned earlier, Phil, Microsoft is not an agriculture company. Even though we have been doing farm beats and working with farmers, we are not the agricultural experts. We needed to work with a company that knew about agriculture. And in this case, that's what we do, even with different industries. If you look at how we are working in retail, in financial services and other industries, we work with partners who know a lot about that industry, and we are building the tools for that industry. It was the same case here where Bayer knows a lot about agriculture. They are the largest input company. Climate Corp was the first ag tech unicorn. It also has more than 180 million acres under management. Bayer works with multiple suppliers and customers. And at Microsoft, if we have to really make a difference in agriculture, in the future of food, fiber, fuel, and feed, we have to work with the leader in this space, and that is Bayer. So that's why we are super excited about bringing the depth of expertise, not just in the Bayer technical side, but the Bayer sales, management, and all our partnership with Microsoft, if we have to make a real difference in this space. And that's what made it clear that we have to partner with Bayer if we have to make progress in this future of food.
So Sally, thanks for going through those stories. Thank you for indulging me as I'm here at the 2022 Category Management Association's annual meeting. It's gonna get started in just a couple minutes from now. And don't forget, for more and to watch this episode as well as archived episodes, go to supermarketguru.com. Look at it on Facebook Live, look at it on LinkedIn Live, and make sure that you sign up for our newsletters on supermarketguru.com. And we'll see you back in studio next Monday at our regular time.